Welcome everyone to today's podcast. My name is Deborah Boholt, and today we're going to be talking about taking action and what's the first step. One of the things that I hear from, you know, students when I'm talking around the place and engaging with students about where they're heading, what they want to achieve, one of the things that I find is that they simply don't know where to start. So I thought today's podcast would be well worth talking about where you actually start. And I think we're going to start with some questions, because that's really something that anatomically we are pre-programmed to be problem solvers. So as problem solvers, you know, when we ask ourselves a question, our whole anatomy goes into play to determine what the answer or what the solution is to that particular question. Now, it doesn't have to be a problem necessarily. It might just be a really good question. So what's the first question we should be asking ourselves if we want to, you know, get ahead in all of those things? Well, the first question is, what do you want? Now, that's a really important question. It's something I talk about all the time, because unless you know what you want, how on earth do you know what decisions you've got to make to take you closer or further away from whatever that is? You don't have a track, you don't have a path to follow. So knowing what you want is absolutely the first thing you need to determine. And this can be the hardest thing that you need to determine, because, you know, giving an answer that's not specific, such as I want to be financially free, isn't good enough. You've really got to nail that. You've got to nail it down to, okay, in 2 years' time, how do I want to be living my life? Or in 5 years' time, how do I want to be living my life? And I like to cage, you know, things in this way, because if you put it too far out, like 10 years or even 5 years, I think is too far, then you kind of get lost in the process, and, you know, some of the goals might be too grandiose and they're not really what you want. It's just a wish list and all of these things that I think it is much better to have a closer time frame. And I like 2 years. And the reason I like 2 years is because it's far enough away for your insecurities to be put aside. So it's far enough away that you don't think, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to achieve that, or how on earth am I going to do that, or all of those sort of things. But it's close enough to go to put some planning into place to make it happen. So 2 years is what I like to say. So the first question I think is, okay, in 2 years' time, where do I want to be? How do I want to be living? Who do I want to be living with? What kind of house do I want to be living in? What kind of car do I want to be driving? What kind of holidays do I want to be taking? You know, what do I want to be doing with my time on a daily basis? Because when you're doing those types of, when you're asking those types of questions, then you're automatically going into solution mode. And when I say anatomically, I mean it. I mean every atom in your body and your neuropeptides and energy levels and everything else goes into a sequence of events to actually answer that question and solve that question for you. Now, I also find at this point it's advantageous to write it down. Get a piece of paper, get it out right now if you like, and put on the top of it, what do I want? Write the date. Two years from today, and go, okay, in such and such a time, I'm going to be living like this, and start to put some headings down, like where, what, who, what kind of income, how do you spend your life, all of those kind of things. And then start to visualize that and go, okay, well, I could see myself doing that in 2 years' time. Now, the next question from that is, okay, if that's where I want to be in 2 years' time, how much money do I need to make that happen? You know, what kind of income do I need coming in to live that kind of life? And what kind of assets would I need to make that happen? Because what that does is that puts some quantitative measures around the process for you. It puts quantitative measures around what what you want to make happen and what you need to do to get to that point. So you've got an end goal. You know, and what do I want is very important. And that end goal is very, very important as well. So the next question for that, after that, once you've decided all of that, and I really would like you to get involved in this process and really, really have fun with it. You know, have fun, have have the dreams and go through the enjoyment of actually creating those dreams, even to the point of creating a vision board. I find vision boards very advantageous because what they do is they quantify and they put into a visual format the results that you want to achieve. And the other thing that happens when you do a vision board is that it creates an emotion. And you've got to remember that 90% of you doesn't deal in words. It deals in emotion. And when you can create the emotional attachment to whatever it is that you want to happen, then that's when the other 90% of you also kicks into gear to solve the problems, to create the situations, to make you aware of varying circumstances that might be going on in your life that you could perhaps take advantage of to take you closer to that particular end goal. So that after you've done that and you've had some fun and you might have drawn a vision board, you might have even done a bit of guided meditation or visualization around it, the next thing you've got to do is go, okay, let's work out where we're starting from. So your next question is, what's your starting point? So this is really an accounting process. And what you need to do now is get out a pen and paper and write down your starting position. What does your balance sheet look like? So what you write down, first of all of your assets. What are all your assets? And I would categorize these assets into two parts. The first part is going to be the assets that a bank would count as an asset. So that is your house and possibly a car, any cash you've got, any share portfolio, superannuation, all of those sort of things, and account for all of those assets. Then I want you to write down all of your loans. Now, I actually prefer to put the loans beside the assets. So if I've got a home, for instance, and it might be a $500,000 home, and it's got a $300,000 mortgage against it, so you write the $300,000 loan against it, and then on the next column, you put the net equity in that property, which would actually be the $200,000 in that example. So you do that for all of the assets that you've got. And for the assets that the bank doesn't count, things like, your home and contents, and you might have a few valuables and those sort of things, I'd write them down. But I'd actually include in this section other assets. And there's a reason for this. And these other assets are things like, having a loving relationship, having a great family, having great friends, being able to, walk in the country anytime you want to. And the reason I'm getting you to do this is because it really cements for you both emotionally and visually the successes that you've got in your life that are not material successes. And this also creates an emotional gratification process, because gratitude is something that's very important to success. And being grateful to yourself, being grateful to others that have helped you out along the way, and being grateful for the process is really, it really gives you that reward, and it creates that emotional attachment to achievement and to the good things in your life. Because when you focus on the good things and you focus on gratitude and those sort of things, what's actually happening is that your frequency raises. So the actual particles in your body actually vibrate at a higher frequency. And when this happens, you align yourself energetically with more successful outcomes. I mean, I'll probably do another podcast on this in its entirety, but that's basically what happens. So now you've got your starting point. So you know financially exactly where you're at, and from an emotional state and a lifestyle state, you know where you're at as well. So that's very important. Now, the next question that I want to ask yourself is, how do you see yourself? Because this is very important as well. And because we will only ever be what we see ourselves being. So when you look in the mirror, who do you see? You know, are you happy with who you see? Do you want to change things? And are they things that you can change? Is it something that you need to learn to love what you got? You know, it comes back to those grateful things and focusing on the good things in your life. And who do you see yourself becoming? Because, if you're If you're overweight, let's say, and you only ever see yourself as overweight, then that's all you'll ever be. If you don't have enough money in your life, and that's how you ever see yourself, then that's all you'll ever be. You'll always be short of money in your life. So you really need to see the best of you, you know, and in every aspect, you know, physically, emotionally, financially, and when you can see yourself, perhaps, you know, walking down the beach with your two dogs or whatever it might be, living in this amazing house, doing the things that you love in your life, then that's what you will do. That's what you will become. But you've got to see yourself as that first. So it's very important to do that. Now, I can't understate this area because, you know, I talk to a lot of people and, you know, I counsel a lot of people and I see a lot of people that, you know, verbally they're saying, I want this, I want this, I want this. But emotionally, they don't believe that they can do it because every second word that comes out of their mouth is, yeah, but, you know, and they give me an excuse or they put themselves down or they talk about situations that they think is limiting them from achieving whatever that thing might actually be. And you have to be totally congruent with who you want to become. And it's, you know, there's an old saying, fake it till you make it, which I don't like. But what it actually means is that you've got to be that person to become that person. And that's the way you act, the way you think, the way you believe, the way you the way you transact, the way you hold yourself, absolutely everything, because it's congruence with your desired outcome. And when you get that in its entirety, then that's what you need to be. You know, it's not what you need to think or put out there. It's what you need to be. And when you do that, believe me, everything else falls into place. Now, the next thing you need to do from a financial perspective is actually review your existing portfolio. So if you've got assets there and you've got houses or you've got shares or whatever else you might have, then you need to look at that and go, all right, what in my portfolio is serving me and what is not? Now, there's some actual calculations here that you can do. And the first one is doing a quick yield calculation. Now, so this is just looking at all of your assets and look at how much income they bring in on a yearly basis. So if you had a, you know, a $10,000 share portfolio and it was bringing in, you know, $1,000 worth of dividends every year, which I doubt it would be, but let's say it was, then that would be a 10% yield because it's $1,000 divided by the $10,000 that you've got invested, which gives you a 10% yield. Similarly, if you've got a house and let's say it's a, you know, $500,000 house and you rent it out room by room and you get $50,000 income coming in from that property, then that would be a 10% yield. $50,000 divided by $500,000 is a 10% yield. Now, obviously, I'm picking figures that I can do in my head. If it was $25,000 coming in from rental on that property, then it'd be a 5% yield. So you need to work out that first. So work out first, write down all your assets, and then write down what they're actually yielding you from an income perspective as well. Now, the next thing you need to do is work out what they're doing for you from a return on equity basis. Now, this is actually looking at how much equity you've got tied up in that property or that share portfolio. So the $10,000 is an example. Well, it's $10,000. You're looking at how much it is yielding you from an income perspective and a growth perspective. So how much are they growing versus how much are they yielding? On the house scenario, let's say it's a $500,000 house and you've got a $300,000 mortgage on it. Well, that's $200,000 worth of equity that you've got tied up in that property. So if you're getting the, say, $25,000 a year income, so that's a 5% income yield, but let's say it's in a 5% growth area as well. So that would mean that the value of the property is going up by 5% as well. So that would be 5% of $500,000, which would be $25,000, so it would be growing every year as well. So that would mean that property is getting an income yield of 5% and a growth yield of 5%, which means that property would then be yielding at a 10% yield. So look at how much equity you've got tied up in each one of those properties or assets that you've got, and work out from a growth and an income perspective what your equity is really doing for you. And then I want you to ask yourself a question and go, is that good enough? You know, could I get a better yield somewhere else? Could I get a better equity growth somewhere else? Is there anything that I can do, particularly for properties, that I could manufacture growth on? You know, could I make that property increase in value somehow? Could I increase the yield on that property somehow? And by asking yourself these questions, what you're doing is you're formulating a response process of what you should do with that property. And some properties, the answer might be, no, it's not good enough and I could do better somewhere else. I could take that equity out of that property and put it somewhere else, in which case there's your answer. And there's another calculation that I probably can't explain on a podcast, but it's called opportunity cost analysis. And I've got some spreadsheets and things for this that I give to all of my students. And it talks about exactly whether you should keep or sell a property. And it will tell you categorically whether it's something you should get rid of or something you should actually keep. So, you know, those are great calculations to really work out what your current situation is and what you can do with your existing properties. So once you've worked out all of that, the next thing we need to work out is, okay, so what's my next step? You know, if your goal, for instance, was to replace your income, and you need to work out, well, how long is it going to take me to do that? And what you need to understand here is you've got to have some reality. You've got to have some understanding around what it takes to replace an income. And this is where education comes into play. And the more you know about things and the more you know, a subdivision is going to take you this long and cost you this much money and it should make you that much money for this kind of property and this kind of value. And renovation should be able to do this on for a cosmetic and that much for a structural. And, you know, this is how long a development's going to take you and what it should do over there. You know, all of these things, the more you know about it, you get some reality around how many deals you can do at any one time, how long they're going to take you, how hard they're going to be, how time consuming they're going to be, and how much money they're going to tie up. Because all the answers to all of those questions mean that will determine what your next strategy is. So I really can't answer the next question for you. You need to get yourself some education. You know, you really need to be joining the I Love Real Estate programs and tapping into this kind of education where you can work these things out for yourself. Because there's no good going to a third party and handing over all your money and them, you know, either doing the right thing or the wrong thing by you. Because you don't get any gain out of that. You know, you've got to understand this process and you've got to be, it's your money. You've got to control your money. And in by understanding these things, that's where you really need to write your own business plan. I got a letter the other day, which I might actually read to you. And it's a letter from one of my students. And he's just given me, his name's Stephen, he's given me a little bit of background here. He says he's an expat. And he found me on the internet while looking for online investment courses. He visited Adelaide, this is last July, and attended one of my conferences down there. And he, at the time, he thought the way to go was negative gearing, which obviously it isn't. You know, negative gearing keeps you in your job. It doesn't certainly help you replace income. And what he actually wanted to do was replace income. So after the conference, he arranged to meet one of my consultants down there who helps with strategizing on what kind of deals to do and what their capacity is and sets up the loans and all that kind of stuff. And between the two of them, they worked out that they were able to turn some of his existing portfolio, in fact, two of his properties, into positively geared properties that had previously been negative. And he didn't even know that he could do that. So he turned a property that was negatively geared into a property that is now $33,000 positively geared. He had another property, which is also in South Australia, which he turned from this $570 a week, he turned into $990 a week. So that's now positively geared. And then he bought another little property down there, which is also $25,000 a year positively geared. He went on to talk about how he's now bought another property, which he's working on, even though he lives overseas, but he's been able to use some of the spreadsheets and contacts and things that I give to all of my students to be able to create another another property that's $27,000 a year positively geared and gain an equity increase of $280,000 in equity. And by the time it's finished, it's actually going to be $55,000 positively geared. He goes on to talk about how he's just bought another property and another property. And basically what he says is in 8 months, he's been able to replace over nearly $100,000 worth of passive income. And by the end of 2017, he expects to be able to replace his very high salary that he's earning overseas and be able to return to Australia on his passive income. So isn't that fantastic? You know, just to be able to do those sort of things. And these opportunities are everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere. It's really about getting the education to know what those next moves actually are. So, you know, when you're talking about passive income and you're talking about income replacement and growing substantial portfolios and all of those sort of things, it really comes down to working to a strategic plan. And that's something that I don't think other people should do for you. I think it's something you should learn to do for yourself, because the more you understand this, the easier it becomes, because no one else has got your personality. No one else has got your dreams and wants. So no one else is going to be able to do this as effectively as you are. You need to get this education. You need to get this understanding so that you can create those goals, those dreams, and those realities for yourself. So guys, I hope that's been a little bit helpful for you today. I would love to see you at one of my free events around the country. I mean, I do them on a semi-regular basis. And, you know, even if you just come along for the one day, you'll learn an enormous amount of information, because it's a jam-packed day of lots and lots of information. And if you want to know when the next ones are coming up, what I suggest you do is to jump onto my website, www.iloverealestate.tv. The website is absolutely packed with lots of articles and audios and videos and all sorts of stuff that you can download and go through for yourself. There's hours and hours of information there for you. And I want to get you to the stage where you're writing me one of those letters and saying, thank you so much, you know, this is what I've done, really, really, really happy with the process, etc., etc. So, guys, that's it for me. Don't forget to get onto iTunes and leave a comment for me. Very happy to and rate my podcasts if you're enjoying them, and pass them on to your friends, because it's important to have mates in the market. And the more mates you've got in the market that are going along the same journey, that you can talk to and chat to and correspond with, the better everything is for everybody. So pass it on. Leave me some comments, because I'm going to be giving away some prizes to those people who leave ratings for me. And I'll be back again to talk to you next week on another completely different topic. Bye for now, guys, and I'll catch you again soon. Bye.